Well, good morning, everybody. This is Bob Elson. We're set again for our usual Sunday morning show. And remember, a lot of football on tap today, but also a lot of baseball. The White Sox are at home playing another game with California. The Cubs will be winding up their year's affairs with the Cardinals by playing down at St. Louis. And the Bears will be on the tube and on radio and everything else on Monday night, a Monday night game against the Minnesota Vikings. A lot of speculation about that game. The Bears are a slight favorite. I believe it's 2.5 or 3 points. But almost everybody I talk to likes the Bears. And the Vikings are certainly no pushover. If you saw them play against Denver, I thought they were a better team than Denver that particular night. Their defense was as good as Denver's, and they had a fine offense. So they're a dangerous team. This is actually no cinch for the Bears. It should be a great football game. I'm talking football because our guest today is an old friend of mine and one of the top football writers in the country, Don Pearson of the Chicago Tribune, who has been with the Bears from training camp right on into the season and will follow them and their fortunes all during the campaign. So we have a lot of football to talk about with Don, and he'll be our guest in just about 1 minute. We're delighted to have Don Pearson of the Chicago Tribune, one of the outstanding sports writers in our area, as a guest on our show today for the third or fourth time, and he's always an interesting guest, and we're delighted to see him again. And he has been following the fortunes of the Bears ever since the first day up at Lake Forest. Don, to start with, a new coach, Armstrong, and the former coach, Pardee, is having a fine start with Washington. How do they compare in their philosophies toward this great game?
Well, they're very similar, I think. Neil is a little more low-key, a little more relaxed around his players, makes them feel more comfortable, talks to them in the office, that sort of thing. Pardee never did that. And Pardee was good for the Bears when they were younger. He was a little more of a disciplinarian, I think, a little more aloof, and brought the Bears along real great for as young a team as they were. He had to make a lot of cuts and bring in a lot of people, and that was real good for him. And Neil, now, as they're a little older, a little more mature, Neil is the type of coach, I think, that is real good for him now.
Well, tomorrow night, Neil Armstrong will be up against his former boss, Bud Grant, and the Minnesota Vikings at Soldier Field. I just have a feeling that's going to be a terrific football game.
I've covered the Bears now for 7 or 8 years, Bob, and this, I think, is the biggest game the Bears have ever played since I've been there. Now, it's a big game for the Vikings. They've got their backs against the wall, but look what it can do for the Bears if they win this game. Puts the Vikings 3 games behind after 4 games. There's only 12 more games to play after this. And look who the teams have to play. They've got to play Oakland. Minnesota's got to play Dallas and Los Angeles. The Bears don't have to play Dallas and Los Angeles. Very big game for the Bears. If they can beat the Vikings Monday night, big step toward the Central Division title, I think.
Don, what's the peculiar history of this game, this meeting between these two teams?
Well, in the last 5 games have been decided by a total of 7 points. The Vikings lead 75-68, and all 5 of those games have been decided by kicks. So be careful when you're taking points on this one. It's going to be a 1-point game, a 2-point game, a 3-point game. It's going to be decided by a field goal, a blocked punt, a bad play. Remember, 3 years ago, the Bears have 10 men on the field. Tarkenton picks it up right away, throws a touchdown pass. 13-9, the Vikings win. It's going to be decided like that.
Well, I know that the Vikings have a good offense, and they've got one of the greatest players in the pro game in Foreman, but it seems to me that they lack a running at the halfback side, that the Bears, they have Harper, and then they have their great back, and they complement each other, but who do the Vikings have to go along with Foreman?
Well, they have Walter Payton's uncle. Did you know that?
No.
That's his uncle from San Diego. They just traded for him from San Diego. What's his name? Do you know his name?
No. Did he used to be with Detroit?
Ricky Young. Ricky Young. Oh. You know, he's just been in the league as long as Payton has. They ran together at Jackson State, and he's Walter Payton's uncle by marriage. And he likes to call him Uncle Ricky. They're the same age. They played in the same college.
And well, how can Uncle Ricky do?
Well, Uncle Ricky is a great receiver. He caught 12 passes in the first game. And that's what the Vikings like to do. They like to throw the ball, and they have six receivers, both wide receivers. They have two tight ends and both backs, Foreman and Ricky Young. And they all catch the ball, and they'd rather do that than run. And that's how, that's what they'll do Monday night.
What about Rashad? He's a great receiver.
He certainly is, and he's had trouble in the last in a couple games of holding on to the ball, and so is Sammy White. Now, the Bears can't count on that, though, for Monday night. They're going to break out any time and catch six or seven balls. They've only caught one touchdown pass. So you got to look for Tarkenton. What? Tarkenton's thrown nine interceptions. He's gone through three of his seasons without throwing that many interceptions before. So he's due. On the other hand, you look at the Bears. Walter Payton's due. He hasn't had a good game now all season. He's due for a 150-yard game, maybe a 200-yard game. And he's averaged 140-some yards against the Vikings in his six games against them.
Was that in your paper yesterday morning? They had a story about that Payton is getting moody or something?
I think that was in another paper. He hasn't been himself for the last 3 weeks, and I don't know what it is. He ought to be himself. He's got enough money to be whatever he wants to be, I guess. But he hasn't run like he has. And I think one of the main reasons is, if you remember, he didn't play at all in the preseason. He played. He carried four times against Oakland in the first game, and he caught a pass against St. Louis in the second game and was hurt and didn't play at all. So this is really his third game of the year, and normally that would be in the middle of a preseason. And no matter how good you are, I think you need to have your timing. You need to have a little hitting. You need to get the feel for the game again.
Don, I know it's a lot to ask of a quarterback to develop the talents, let's say, of a Bart Starr. I was looking at some Green Bay films the other day, and that Bart Starr could really pick those receivers out, and he didn't throw too many interceptions either. How far has Avellini come along? He seems to blow hot and cold.
Well, the thing about Bob Avellini is he's never going to look like Bart Starr, I don't think, or Johnny Unitas, or any of the great smooth quarterbacks. If he looks like anybody, it's going to be Bobby Lane. And the thing he's been able to do is win. Now, the reason Bart Starr was so good was that they had a great defense, they had a great offensive line, they had a great running game, they had great receivers. You take a guy like Burt Jones, he can almost do it by himself. Bob Avellini will never be like that. He'll never be able to make something out of nothing, to scramble for 20 yards, to keep a drive going. He has to have the good people around him, the good receivers, the good running backs, the good line, the good defense. He doesn't have all of those things yet. But the best thing about him is that he doesn't make a lot of mistakes. He doesn't make the dumb play. If you saw the Bears play San Francisco 2 weeks ago, why were they throwing the ball when they were ahead 12-9 at midfield? Or 13-9. They were leading the Bears with 6 minutes to go, and they started throwing the ball. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's stupid football. Buffon has two interceptions, the Bears win. Now, Avellini or his coaches aren't going to allow him to do that. And that's what he's been able to do. And if you look at the Bears' winning streak, they've won nine straight regular season games. And in each one of the games, or maybe I think eight out of the nine games, if you look at the play-by-play, Avellini's come up with a big play late in the game to win it. Last week against Detroit, they're winning 7-0. He comes up with two big passes, and they put him away. This happens almost every week.
So, in other words, you feel that development program of Bob Avellini as a quarterback is on target?
I think it is. I think he's played now 38 or 39 NFL games. He seems to learn things every week. He's a smart quarterback. He's critical of himself. He works hard. He prepares. He's never going to be Burt Jones. He's never going to be Ken Stabler, maybe. But he's going to be adequate because it takes more than one player to win a game.
As you know, one of the important jobs of a quarterback is to come out of that huddle and read a defense. How would you say offhand that he and Tarkenton compare in that important phase of quarterbacking?
Well, of course, Tarkenton's probably, there probably isn't anyone like Tarkenton. We were talking the other day. The Bears' defense, one of the strengths of the Bears' defense now is that they're switching around, showing other teams different looks and confusing them. And they're not going to confuse Tarkenton at all. he's seen everything. Neil said maybe he hasn't seen everything in one game like the Bears hope to show him. But there's nobody better than Tarkenton. He knows what he's and he can pick on a defense. He can see a weakness and start to pick on it. Bob hasn't reached that level yet at all.
Don, have you noticed among the good quarterbacks this year how many interceptions they're throwing? I'm thinking of Stabler, who, remember in the bowl games, this guy is on target, and those receivers seem to come out of the woodwork, and they're wide open. Here he has run into 5 and 6 interceptions in one half.
Stabler and Tarkenton both, I think, have 9 interceptions. They're leading the league in that category, and that's very unusual. I haven't had an opportunity to see Oakland yet. Stabler's the most accurate passer in football, no question. Yeah. He really threads the needle. But in Tarkenton's case, his receivers have dropped the ball. A couple of the two or three of his interceptions have bounced off receivers into the hands of the defense. So you'd have to say, because of his track record, that's going to end, and we just hope it ends after Monday night.
Well, after Monday night comes Oakland. This has to be one of pro football's greatest teams. I really think that talent-wise, they're as good as Dallas. They've come up with a couple of new runners there who seem to be running it nothing flat.
That's right, and the reason for that, Bob, is they probably have the best offensive line in football. They can run on anybody. They could just, and especially on the left side with Gene Upshaw and the big tackle, they just they can run on anybody. And that's, you think Stabler and Oakland are a passing team, but if you look at the stats, who is the best running team in football? Who runs the most plays? The Oakland Raiders almost every year. They are a great team.
They did that last week. They started on their own 20, and they were in the end zone before you know it, and they didn't throw a pass in one series.
You have to figure that they would be the AFC favorite right now to get into the Super Bowl, although the AFC has more good teams than the NFC, almost per division. Pittsburgh is undefeated. New England's going to be good. Now, you think Oakland's going to win that game tonight? I don't know.
That's right. Well, New England is dangerous, but Grogan throws an awful lot of interceptions, too.
Yeah, he's a streak thrower. You can get hot like he did last Monday night.
Well, it should be a great game. I'm glad we're going to be able to see a Sunday night game.
Well, it's nice to be able to see the Raiders the week before they come into Chicago. I'm sure all the Bears would be watching it and see if they can pick up something from it.
Have you ever had a chance to talk with the Minnesota coach, Bud Grant? He looks like a sphinx down there on the sideline. He never seemed to change his facial expression, no matter what's happening.
I saw that he changed it the other night when those referees made that call. Did you notice? It looked like he was getting flushed, and all of a sudden he exploded out there on the field. And I've seen him throw down his headset and stomp on it. But I understand all that's for effect. I don't know him that well. I've talked to him. He has a... Underneath that stare, he's got a subtle sense of humor. He doesn't live football day and night. That's what I like about him. He'll take off on a 6 o'clock in the morning and go up to his place and hunt instead of watching football films. He doesn't spend as much time in the coaching aspect of the game as a lot of these other teams, a lot of these other coaches. He delegates authority. But everybody knows who's the boss, and he's a great tactician, and really, on his record, maybe the finest coach in the game. Tom Landry gets credit, but this guy is, year in and year out, he's been great, with not as much talent.
Our guest today, and we're delighted to have him, is one of the outstanding football and sports writers in the country, Don Pearson of the Chicago Tribune, and we'll be back with our guest in just a moment. We're talking football today at Northwest Federal with Don Pearson. The Chicago Tribune has been our guest many times. He's one of the best informed football writers in the country. You know, almost every story you read or almost every football game you listen to, especially in the pros, you hear so much about the 3-4 defense. What's so different about that to what we've been looking at over the years?
Well, you know, Bob, that's like a lot of things in football. Coaches like to think that they're different and they're innovative and they've just invented something. And I like the comment that Bud Wilkinson down in St. Louis made. He's given credit for inventing that defense back at Oklahoma in the 50s. And what he, the way he explains it is that there's 5 men in the middle of your defensive line. Now, whether you play four down and one in the middle, or three down and two in the middle, it often leads to discussions that are more esoteric than they deserve, is the way he put it. If you have four good rushmen and Dick Butkus, you play four down and one in the middle. If you only have three good rushmen and you have a couple of adequate linebackers like Tom Hicks and Don Reeves, you play three down and two in the middle. The two on the outside remain the same, the two outside linebackers. So really, it's not as big a deal as the coaches would like to make you think so. The reason it's effective to have three down linemen and four linebackers is that the more guys you have off the ball, the more angles they have, and the harder it is to block a guy, the harder it is for an offensive lineman to come off the line and find the man he's supposed to block. So it's a very difficult defense on which to run.
That's a fine explanation. You just mentioned Bud Wilkinson was a good friend of mine and one of the really class guys in football. He was a great coach in college, and now he's tackled late in life the job of trying to revitalize the St. Louis Cardinals, so far with no success, but I hope he survives it. I think football, regardless of his age, so what? What is he?
62, and as George Halas said, he's just a kid. He's a great coach, I think. There's no question about that. And the problem he's in down there is one with management, one with ownership. They've had some problems with their payroll. Some of their players are dissatisfied. And, of course, four of their the best offensive players are no longer with that team. So Bud Wilkinson's got a little bit of a rebuilding job to do down there, but I don't think he'll have any problem.
They lost a great runner, too.
In Metcalf.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, he's one of the four. Metcalf, Ike Harris, who went down to New Orleans, and Conrad Dobler. And the biggest loss was their tight end who got hurt, J.V. Kane. So that took almost half of that great offense away, and, of course, their offense was the key to that team.
You know, and I think Hart can play quarterback for anybody.
He's a great quarterback. No one could figure out when they played the Bears here 3 weeks ago why they were running. They came out in a wishbone, and they started running like a college offense. And the Bears stuffed it. And he didn't start passing until late in the game when he went after Mel Gray. A lot of Bears and a lot of players and a lot of people close to the Bears are glad that he didn't start passing earlier.
Don, a mutual friend of ours, and I think one of the greatest guys in town, George Connor, who was an All-American at Notre Dame and is just a marvelous individual, he and George Blanda have started a campaign to eliminate the face mask. They think that the face mask, you see those penalties grabbing the face mask, they figure somebody can get a broken neck one of these days if somebody keeps doing that sort of thing, and they think it does more harm than good. What's your opinion?
Well, you know, they couldn't eliminate the face mask, Bob, because these players today, and you can see why Blanda and Connard want to do this, they didn't have the kind of TV exposure that these guys have now. You see, these guys have to keep their faces nice for those commercials and things, you see, for their movie contracts.
Yeah.
They'd never go for it.
Oh,
but seriously, I think that something's going to have to be done, and it's always been my contention that the game, the way it's written, the rules of the game, the way they're written, can be interpreted in just about any manner. In other words, it's up to the referees and up to the league management to enforce the rules the way they're written. You don't need guys jumping on top of guys after they're done. You blow the whistle.
Right.
You kick them out of games. Or you penalize them. That's all it would take. These guys aren't alley thugs. They're not out there to maim people. They're out there to play the game within the rules. You take Doug Plank. Now, Doug Plank gets some bad raps. Doug rarely gets a penalty. He admits the whistles are slow. But you see, if he doesn't hit his man before the whistle, the coach is going to turn around and say, "What's the matter with you?"
Yeah.
That's how he's become a big league player, is by going all out, enthusiastic, until the whistle blows.
Speaking of personalities, what about Tatum with Oakland?
He's the original hard hitter. He hit all during college too, but he's another one of those guys. I don't think he gets a whole lot of penalties. He plays the game hard, and this is the way most of them play. How many guys are going to continue to hit after the whistle if they're getting penalized or kicked out of games? That's only going to cost them their job.
Yeah.
So I think it's up to the referees and up to the coaches and up to the league management to say, hey, we don't need violence to this extent. And it's up to the fans, too. I think the fans recognize good football, good hard football, and they recognize dirty football. And they like to see hard, clean tackling. But if they like to see dirty stuff, then they're in. Then the game's going to die because it just won't. It won't last.
I agree with you. Yesterday, you covered Northwestern Wisconsin, teams that are really not really well equipped as yet to compete in the Big Ten, dominated by Michigan and Ohio State. But you did cover Oklahoma and Stanford. These are two outstanding teams, and Oklahoma seems to come up with a fantastic group of runners. No matter what the year is.
They look like they had five Walter Paytons running out of the backfield. Unbelievable. And it was a very interesting contrast in styles. Oklahoma is a great running team. And, of course, Stanford has the most sophisticated passing attack in college football. And it was sort of fun to see one of them run at the other and the other pass at the other. And it ended up 35-28? This was 3 weeks ago. And Stanford could have won the game had they caught a pass in the end zone on the last play. So it was very exciting to watch. But it was an indication of how, to me, the running game, especially on the college level, is so dominant. Because you control the ball. It's more of an aggressive psychological attack. And it didn't seem like Stanford was really in the game. As exciting as they were, it didn't seem like they were really in the game.
Don, some of the Midwestern football fans refer to the Big Ten as the Big Two. Their record outside of the framework of the Big Ten is not too good. Michigan got slaughtered out on the coast, and Alabama took Ohio State apart and put them back together again. They really and truly slaughtered them. Do you think Big Ten football is overrated?
Yeah, I do. I do think it is. I'm from Ohio State, so I think it's the Big One instead of the Big Two, Bob. No, Big Ten football in the 50s and in the early 60s was dominant. And the reason Ohio State and Michigan have been able to continue to dominate is because they get the best players out of the state of Ohio. High school football in Ohio is so much better than high school football in Illinois that you wouldn't believe it. Uh-huh. And they can beat these other teams just by running the ball. All they have to do is run the ball. They don't even have to throw a pass. They get out to the West Coast or these other places, and they're getting killed. And that's why you see Ohio State go after a quarterback like this freshman, Art Schleister. And I predict they'll win a national championship with this kid because Woody Hayes has shown that he'll pass if he has to. And now he sees that he can't compete on a national level now with this Neanderthal football they play in the Midwest.
Well, I did see that kid against Penn State, and I'll say this, he can throw that football like it's a baseball.
He's the first quarterback that's looked good throwing five interceptions.
Yeah, he
looked good. He threw five interceptions, and we thought, boy, this kid is great. It's because we're not used to seeing any passes here in the Midwest.
Yeah.
Well, that's what it is. Well, certainly one type of game complements the other, and you got to have both, as you well know. If you got great runners, they'll run better if you got a good passer, too.
That's right. And I think they're seeing this in the Big Ten more often. I know Northwestern is committed to the pass. You've got to have more than be able to just go out there and say, well, we're going to pass. You do have to start with the running game. You really have to have the big linemen, and you have to have the good backs, because no matter on what level you play football, you've got to control the ball on the ground to win. Every statistic shows that. We were talking about Oakland a while ago, and they're supposed to be a great passing team. They run the ball. The Dolphins won two Super Bowls, not because Greasy was passing, but because Sanka and those guys were running. Pittsburgh is the same way. The running games win. That's why Stanford will never win. But you do have to pass as well. You have to have the balance.
Some interesting opinions from the football expert of the Chicago Tribune, Don Pearson. We're delighted to have him as a guest. And we'll be back in just 1 minute. Our guest today, Don Pearson of the Chicago Tribune. Incidentally, Sports Illustrated has got a great football series in there, the last issue. Be sure to read it.
I'll do that.
I think they covered the Ohio State game with Penn State.
Yeah, they like Penn State. I'd like to see Penn State win a national championship. He's a great coach. They don't play the kind of schedule that some of these other teams do, but they always seem to do well against teams like Ohio State. Of course, they would have to beat Alabama or Arkansas or somebody in a bowl game in order to win. But, you know, they've never won a national championship there, and they've been undefeated on several occasions. So I'd like to see them win a national championship.
Don, tomorrow night, the Vikings and the Bears at Soldier Field. It should be one of the great games of the year. A final opinion on it.
I'll take the Bears because I think that Walter Payton hasn't played the type of football that we all know he can play. And against the Vikings, he's always been able to run well. He's averaged 140-some yards in the six games that he's played. The last time he played, you remember, he set an NFL record of 275 yards against this team. They're the same players, and I see no reason why he can't do the same thing again.
Thanks so much, Don, for being our guest and for your interesting opinions, and good fortune to you and your great newspaper, the Chicago Tribune.
Thank you, Bob. My pleasure.
Don Pearson, great football writer with the Chicago Tribune, our guest today. Remember, the White Sox are at home. A lot of football on the tube today. Four pro games, I believe. And then there's a big game tonight, Oakland and New England. That should really be a terrific game. Anyway, have a happy Sunday. And now this is Bob Elson saying goodbye until next Sunday at our usual time.